Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshwa Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. So this morning's class features a really wonderful verse, short purport, but very poignant, from the 15th chapter. But we're going to review a bit, from, what was it, Tuesday's class, and then we'll be reading chapters 13 and 14 in preparation for that verse. So, who can remember what is the subject of the 12th chapter of the first canto? Can anyone remember that? That is the chapter where Parikshit Maharaj is happy. He's very happy about something going on. Did I say Parikshit? I meant Yudhishthira, excuse me. Yeah. Yudhishthira is very happy. Yeah, the birth of Parikshit. Yes. Maharaj Parikshit is born. His astrology, his chart looks really good. So Maharaj Yudhishthira is happy for a brief time. Then in chapter 13, the beginning of the end of the Pandava reign takes place with the return of what great person from pilgrimage? Vidura. Yes, Vidura has returned from his long pilgrimage. And so he has come to see his brother, whose name is? Dhritarashtra. Very good. So Vidura and Dhritarashtra's conversation will make up the rest of the 13th chapter, which we'll read this morning. And then we'll proceed to the 14th chapter, which is more ominous news. I'm speaking from the Bhagavatam, the original text. In this summary book, the chapters are different numbers, so don't get confused. The chapter 14 deals with all of the omens, the evil omens that Yudhishthira sees foretelling the arrival of Kali Yuga. And then the 15th chapter, finally, the Pandavas quit home. They retire and give up their kingdom. So these are very dramatic events, very sad events, very emotional events that are quite critical to the basic understanding of what happens later in Srimad Bhagavatam. So in another sense, we're wrapping up the Mahabharata here. The Mahabharata is the whole story of the Pandavas and their development and conquest of the throne. And finally, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we read about how they gave up the throne. So that's this morning's class. Any questions on our context of what we'll be reading this morning? Okay. Here's your book over here. Please. Okay, so let me see. So we are starting on page 58 of this book, verse number 12. You recall we talked about on Tuesday how the time factor had caught up. Sutta is making a philosophical statement. The time factor catches up with everybody. And now Vidura is actually speaking to his brother Dhritarashtra to inform him how time has captured him as well. So Saint Vidura went to see his brother late one day. He whispered, "Dhritarashtra, you must leave without delay, for Krishna in his form of time has caught you indisposed and living at the mercy of your slaughtered children's foes. Your father, brother, well-wishers, and sons are all now dead. You are unprepared to meet your death with little time ahead. You're blind, you'll soon be deaf, and now your memory is off. Your teeth are loose, your liver's bad, and day and night you cough. How forceful are the hopes of one attached to home and wife. How much he'll bow and shame himself to save his wretched life. You've grown to be the palace dog who grovels, sits, and comes to eat the scraps of Bhima, who destroyed your 100 sons. Though Yudhisthira is right to care and see that you're maintained, for you to take his endless help should make you feel ashamed. Remember, you tried killing him with poison and with fire and stole away his kingdom to appease your son's desire. Despite your plan to carry on at cost of pride and fame, your body, like a rotting shirt, grows ever weak and lame. Now, can you understand this truth by looking at yourself, or do you need to be awakened by somebody else? The brutal truth, my brother, is that death comes ever near. The self-controlled leave home to die, detached and free of fear. Such people see the misery that birth and death impart and give up sense enjoyment, finding God within their heart. Now please, my learned brother, like an ancient Vedic sage, before you are bewildered by the coming Kali age, go northward to the mountains. Leave the palace right away. Do not inform your relatives. They'll only block your way. Old Dhritarashtra drew his breath. The shock of what he'd heard confounded him at first, but he accepted every word. Resolving in an instant to cut off his family ties, he walked out of the palace with Vidura as his guide. Why did he need Vidura as his guide? He's blind. Now Dhritarashtra's wife Gandhari quickly understood that he would end his life as an ascetic in the woods. Because of her great chastity, she left home with him too and vowed to linger at his side until his life was through. Gandhari went at her own risk. She knew her husband swore that he would not concern himself with loved ones anymore. Gandhari joined the brothers walking north throughout the night like honored soldiers, battle-scarred from long and worthy fight. The sun arose as Yudhisthira, the saint among the kings, began his day as usual with prayers and offerings. He worshipped all the Brahmin priests with gifts of gold and land and went to show respects to all the elders of his clan. The palace servant told the king, with numb and vacant stare, that Dhritarashtra and Vidura were no longer there. Gandhari, too, was missing. Yudhisthira, in shock, saw there Sanjaya, Dhritarashtra's aide. He clutched him and declared, "Where is the great Vidura, who allays my troubled mind? Where is our revered uncle, who is elderly and blind? His wife and he have lost their sons. I gave them no relief. Have they now thrown themselves into the Ganges in their grief?" Sanjaya could not answer. Sorrow paralyzed his tongue. He served old Dhritarashtra long and well. He too was stunned. Not knowing how Vidura had inspired his master's heart, Sanjaya too thought grief had led his master to depart. Sanjaya then composed himself, brushed off his teary eyes, and thought of Dhritarashtra as he offered this reply. By the way, where else do we see Sanjaya in Arista? Yes, in fact. All right. In fact, the Bhagavad Gita begins with Dhritarashtra asking Sanjaya to tell him what he's seeing, right? So now this is some time later, and again, Sanjaya is very loyal to Dhritarashtra. And just imagine, Dhritarashtra is left without saying a word to this loyal friend of his. So you can imagine how hurt Sanjaya is feeling. Sanjaya says, "Dear scion of the Kurus, in this gray and empty dawn, I do not know where Dhritarashtra and his wife have gone. They did not say a word to me before they chose to go. You see, I too am cheated by those great exalted souls. As all despaired and sat in shock, expressing many fears, the ever-traveling Narada surprisingly appeared. He played upon his veena and displayed a lustrous gleam. King Yudhisthira and everyone stood up to show esteem. "O godly sage," cried Yudhisthira, "my uncles fled our doors, along with my devoted aunt, who lost her sons in war. They left us all adrift upon an ocean of remorse. Can you direct our ship, dear sage, and put us back on course?" Said Narada, "A righteous king has nothing to bemoan, for everybody's actions are controlled by God alone. Though men think they assemble to extol the Lord in verse, the Lord, in fact, assembles them and bids them to disperse. Yes, everyone is bound to the directions of the Lord, like cows attached to nose rings on a strong and lengthy cord. As players set out pawns and later put them all away, the Lord alone determines who will go and who will stay. Do you suppose the body is the greatest human prize, or do you think the soul continues when the body dies? And even if the soul and flesh were somehow intertwined, are bodily affections not illusions of your mind? You think that you are young and strong and feel yourself compelled to care for helpless elders and make sure that they are well. A serpent grips your body. How can you look after theirs when nature, time, and karma rule your bodily affairs? Those creatures who possess no hands are prey for those who do, and creatures who can walk about eat sedentary food. Since every living being somehow lives upon another, you really needn't worry for your uncle and his brother. The Lord is everywhere your aunt and uncles may have gone, so look to him to care for them, so you can carry on. For Krishna has descended as indomitable time to rid the world of demons for the good of humankind. Lord Krishna has his purpose, so you've nothing left to fear. Remain and rule the kingdom until Krishna disappears. Your aged aunt and uncles will soon reach the southern side of rugged Himalayan peaks where saintly souls reside. While sitting by the Ganga, Dhritarashtra will engage in eightfold yoga practice, taking bath three times a day. By executing fire rites while on a water fast, he'll conquer all his senses and forget about his past. Performing yoga postures as he learns to rule his breath, he'll see he's not his body and prepare himself for death. Refining his intelligence with godly qualities, at last he'll come to realize his true identity. Impervious to worldly cares and all contamination, he'll undertake an absolute, unbroken meditation. He'll thoroughly detach himself within a few more days. His flesh will then incinerate by force of mystic blaze. Gandhari shall prefer a fire to painful separation and share in Dhritarashtra's pyre, as well as his salvation. Vidura, feeling joy and grief to see the bodies burn, shall leave again for pilgrimage and never more return. Assuring Yudhisthira that he had filled his obligations, Saint Narada relieved the king of all his lamentation. King Yudhisthira, astonished, took these prophecies to heart as Narada, his purpose filled, decided to depart. So before we go on, a couple of points to know about this chapter. How is it that Dhritarashtra leaves his body? Through what method? Right. So why doesn't he go back to Godhead through bhakti yoga? Yes. Mystic yogis, yes, they don't go up through, they go out through the head, but in Dhritarashtra's case, what was it? That he was too envious of Krishna. Yes, he was too envious of Krishna and the devotees, you see. So this is why he could not be a devotee himself. He had to resort to this lesser practice, because although he could give up his home, he couldn't give up his enviousness. So this is something of Dhritarashtra's character. He is a very mixed character throughout the pastimes of Krishna. He's religious, and yet he can't abide by religious codes. And he respects Krishna, yet he can't do what Krishna tells him to do. There's an instance in the Mahabharata, at least some versions, in which Lord Krishna goes before the battle of Kurukshetra, he goes to visit Dhritarashtra and try to convince him to stop Duryodhana, his son, from harassing the Pandavas. So, although Dhritarashtra is blind, during this visit, Krishna reveals to him the universal form. So he gives Dhritarashtra a hint that no matter what he does, he's not going to be able to protect his sons and fulfill their material desires. So Dhritarashtra sees all this, but as usual, he just capitulates and says, "What can I do?" You know, like a parent will sometimes say if their child is spoiled or misbehaving, they throw up their hands and they say, "What can I do?" And that, you know, that happens to most parents at one point or another. But Dhritarashtra never took a stand. This is the point. Even if you're a parent and your children are misbehaving, you have to take a stand and let them know that if they violate your wishes, there will be consequences for them. You will not support them just because they're more stubborn than you. Was he Brahman realized? That's more the domain of the jnanis than the yogis. Yogis realize the super soul. But it doesn't specify that, to my knowledge. He is wrapped in intense meditation to the point where he just bursts into flames. So that's more of the mystic yoga process. Because he saw Krishna, Dhritarashtra got some special dispensation. The yogis do not necessarily go back to Godhead in general. In fact, they are tempted by the higher planets, the heavenly planets. Prabhupada called that the last snare of Maya. The yogis think, "Now I've been so pure, I'm so pure, I'm so pure," and then they, "Oh, these heavenly worlds look very nice. I think I'll stop off here for a while," and so they don't make it back to Godhead. All right, anything else? He merged in the Brahmajyoti. That he got that Sayujya liberation. Yeah, so we can check that and see. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Let's go on to the next chapter. Lord Krishna disappears. You notice in his prophecies, Narada came and gave all these prophecies. One of the things he mentioned was that you keep ruling until Krishna leaves. This is the first time that Yudhisthira has heard some premonition, or has some premonition that Krishna may actually leave him. So this is... Yes. He will not tell about it, no. Yudhisthira does not hear about it from Vidura, although Vidura is fully aware of it. It has already happened. And Narada is also aware of everything, but he's not telling Yudhisthira all that has taken place. He just says, "You just keep ruling until Krishna disappears." So in a sense, Narada is breaking the news to him very gently. Is it 40? Well, that it's not clear from the Bhagavatam, but it is clear that it is enough for Parikshit to have grown up to a point of being able to accept the throne. So we can understand at least in the range of 20 years, in that range, and perhaps more. Maharaj probably knows something I don't. Okay. So Yudhisthira has enough confidence in Parikshit that he's ready to leave. That much time has elapsed. King Yudhisthira remembered how Lord Krishna eased the weight imposed upon the earth by kings possessed of greed and hate. Arjuna went to Dwarka to learn of Krishna's plans, so Yudhisthira could wisely make his forthcoming commands. He's taking up Narada's instructions, preparing to rule. Arjuna traveled westward to that kingdom by the sea to meet the Lord and others of the Yadu dynasty. A string of evil omens caused King Yudhisthira concern while he waited impatiently for Arjuna's return. Just after Yudhisthira dispatched his trusted younger brother, the weather due in one season turned up within another. The citizens transformed into a greedy, angry mob and cheated for their livelihood, neglecting honest jobs. Beloved, trusted friends began to cheat on one another, and quarrels manifested between fathers, sons, and mothers. Pernicious disagreements broke the bonds of man and wife. King Yudhisthira had never seen his subjects in such strife. As citizens degraded to unrighteous, troubled ways, King Yudhisthira concluded something must have gone astray. He thought his reign was pious, and this trouble undeserved. So Yudhisthira called Bhima to his chambers and observed, Arjuna went for Krishna's counsel. 7 months have passed, and in his absence many evil omens have amassed. I wonder if Lord Krishna has departed from our lives as Narada predicted. Has the time so soon arrived? Lord Krishna has delivered us a kingdom rich with gold, our wives, our heir, our triumphs, and imperial control. It's only due to Krishna that we draw our very breath, and only by his grace can we go forward after death. Just see, my mighty brother, how these threefold miseries produced of one's own flesh, one's peers, or higher deities, alert us all repeatedly of dangers yet to come. Yet we proceed as usual. How foolish we become! The left side of my body, for what seems so many days, has constantly been trembling in an inauspicious way. My heart is palpitating due to vague, uneasy fear. These signs imply an evil time is quickly drawing near. The jackal bitch rebukes the moon while spewing acrid flame, and barking dogs harass me without fear, respect, or shame. The donkey walks around me, while my horse appears bereft. Auspicious beasts like cows now pass me only on my left. Just see, the pigeon heralds news of detriment and doom, while shrieking owls and ravens fill my heart with dread and gloom. These birds foretell the world will fall into some deep abyss. O Bhima, have you ever sensed such inauspiciousness? The earth and mountains throb beneath an evil, smoky sky, while lightning bolts from cloudless thunder shock and mystify. When clouds appear, they shower blood in terrible monsoon, while violent winds hurl dust about and dim the sky at noon. The sun recedes quite early, turning evening into night, revealing stars that seem to be engaged in bitter fights. I'm not the only one who holds such pessimistic views, for everyone I see is shedding tears and quite confused. The rivers, lakes, and reservoirs rise ominously higher, and ghee no longer sets ablaze the sacrificial fire. My mind is weak and seems to grow increasingly disturbed. What is this strange, perplexing time, and what is to occur? The cows no longer nurse their calves. They cry all day and night. The bulls out in the pastures can no longer find delight. The deities appear to weep and want to leave their shrines. Our lovely towns are ugly now. Is this the end of time? These dreadful omens indicate some great catastrophe will soon descend and put an end to Earth's tranquility. Although the touch of Krishna's feet made planet Earth feel graced, these signs warn of a coming time when Earth will be debased. As Yudhisthira expressed his fears to Bhima in this way, it happened that Arjuna came back home that very day. As his great brother walked to him, King Yudhisthira surmised Arjuna was consumed with grief, for tears obscured his eyes. The king was shocked to see Arjuna sickly, weak, and pale. The prophecies of Narada, he thought, shall never fail. As many friends arrived and sensed the dread within the room, the king inquired of Arjuna that fateful afternoon. Welcome home, dear brother. You look weary. Did you spend a pleasant time in Dwarka among our Yadu friends? And how is Vasudeva and his 7 sister brides, the eldest of whom, Devaki, is always at his side? King Yudhisthira recited many leading Yadu names and asked about their welfare and the state of their domains. King Yudhisthira continued, What of Krishna, how is he, who loves the cows, the Brahmins, and his faithful devotees? since Krishna and his brothers graced the kingdom by the sea, these must be days of pleasure for the Yadu dynasty. Does it seem like Yudhisthira is in denial? He's just projecting a very pleasant vision, but his heart is very full of anxiety. King Yudhisthira asked further of Lord Krishna's friends and wives, but all could see Arjuna didn't meet his brother's eyes. At last the king inquired, "Dear Arjuna, are you sick? Did somebody mistreat you as you made your lengthy trip? Did someone speak unkindly words or dare to threaten you? Could you not give in charity or pay some sort of dues? You always guard the cows, the priests, the women, and the weak. Have you now disappointed them? Arjuna, can you speak? Did you approach a woman of uncertain quality, or leave a more deserving woman with indignity? Has some unworthy warrior picked up a sword and shield and beaten you in combat on some distant battlefield? Did you neglect to give some children necessary food, or disregard some older men who should have dined with you? As you returned from Dwarka and tired on the way, did you by chance perform some great unspeakable mistake? Or could it be you seem so bleak because you've been deprived of your most confidential friend, authority, and guide? Has Krishna gone away, Arjuna? I cannot conceive of any other reason why you sit so still and grieve." Arjuna barely heard the king spell out his speculations, for he was numb and struck with grief from Krishna's separation. His handsome mouth and fluid heart appeared to have gone dry, his body pale. Arjuna failed to utter a reply. Arjuna smeared his hands across his reddened, teary eyes and thought of Krishna's love as he released a heavy sigh. Remembering how Krishna toughened him when he was weak, Arjuna calmed himself, inhaled, and raised his head to speak. "Lord Krishna has departed. We're alone now, Yudhisthira. My strength in war, which stunned the gods, has also disappeared. I must discuss Lord Krishna first, for I feel such remorse the universe seems empty and as lifeless as a corpse." Now here he's just remembering Krishna by recounting a number of pastimes. When we and other princes sought the hand of Draupadi, King Drupada, her father, made impossible decrees to pierce a fish-shaped target's eye, as tiny as a dot. But Krishna steered my arrow to exactly the right spot. One time the gods of fire and rain desired a forest veil. Lord Krishna helped me stop the rain. The fire god prevailed. The demon Maya feared those flames, but Krishna heard his call, and grateful Maya built for us a grand assembly hall. Once when evil Jarasandha kidnapped many kings, Lord Krishna brought Arbhima to confront him in the ring. When Bhima struggled, Krishna deftly showed him what to do, and Bhima grabbed his leg and ripped the demon's frame in two. The sons of Dhritarashtra snatched the hair of Draupadi and started to disrobe her as we stood there helplessly. Lord Krishna stopped those scoundrels, and he later took their lives and left a widow's loosened hair upon their grieving wives. And one time in the forest, when our food was at an end, the volatile Durvasa came for lunch with many friends. Lord Krishna smiled and ate one scrap, and then, without delay, Durvasa and his entourage felt full and went away. Lord Krishna once conveyed me to the heavenly abode, where Shiva kindly gave to me his own Gandiva bow. With Krishna at my side, I helped the gods to win a war. But Krishna is now gone, and I am weaker than before. What else but Krishna's friendship made us able to withstand the threats imposed by Dhritarashtra's sons upon our clan? Though Bhishma and so many other heroes took their side, we simply stayed with Krishna, and now all of them have died. When all those Kuru heroes turned their deadly swords on me, Lord Krishna's grace protected me from any injury. Like me, the young Prahlad survived the tortures he went through till Krishna, as Nrisimha, killed Hiranyakashipu. I watered all my horses in that Kurukshetra war while where enemies abounded, and yet I was just ignored. Lord Krishna made this happen, yet I foolishly retained the Lord of all the universe to hold my horse's reins. O Yudhisthira, I see his face, his warm, enchanting smile. I hear his voice addressing me in sweet, informal style. O son of Kunti, my dear friend, great hero of the realm. As I remember Krishna now, my heart is overwhelmed. Lord Krishna dined, relaxed, and spoke with me, his friend, each day. As I felt quite familiar, I would tease the Lord and say, "Oh, you are very truthful," as he made some clever ploy. He'd smile at me exactly as a father to his boy. The trembling Arjuna raised his eyes to Yudhisthira and said, "Disaster struck us as we made our way back here. Lord Krishna's wives were helpless, so I brought them here to stay, and lost them to a gang of thieves who stole them all away." So Arjuna was in Dwarka. Krishna had left, and Krishna's wives were all there unprotected. So Arjuna naturally thought, "Well, I'll take them back to Hastinapur for safety." But they all were stolen from him. Can you imagine how embarrassing that would be for Arjuna? So that brings us to today's verse, which is here 42. "I am the great Arjuna, so-called hero of such fame. My bow and arrows, chariot and horses were the same. Without Lord Krishna, I became as useless in a flash as seeds cast over barren land or ghee poured over ash." So please mark your books there. And Nandakumar Prabhu, you'll take up there on Tuesday next week. Tuesday, actually, Monday's Labor Day, we have no class. Okay, so we are this morning reading chapter 15, verse 21.
Tadvaidanusta ishava sarato hayaste. Tadvaidanusta ishava sarato hayaste. Soham rati nripatayo yata anamanti. Sarvam kshanena tadabuddha sadisha riktam. Bhasman hutam kuhaka radham evoptum i ushyam. Kuhaka radham evoptum ushyam. Tad vai tunus tadishava sarato hayaste. Soham rati nripatayo yata anamanti. Sarvam kshanena tad abud asad isha riktam. Bhasman hutam kuhaka radham evoptam ushyam. Tad vaid hunus tua ishava sarato hayaste. Soham rati nripatayo yata anamanti. Sarvam kshanena tad abhud asad isha riktam. Pasman hutam kuhaka radham evoptam ushyam.
Let's read the synonyms together, please. Tat, the same. Vai, certainly. Dhanu, the same bow. Te ishava, arrows. Saha, the very same. Rata, chariot. Hayate, the very same horses. Sa aham, I am the same Arjuna. Rati, the chariot fighter. Nripataya, all the kings. Yata, whom. Anamanti, offered their respects. Sarvam, all. Chanena, at a moment's notice. Tat, all those adbhut became asat, useless, isha, because of the Lord, riktam, being void, basman, ashes, hutam, offering butter, kuhaka, radham, money created by magical feats, eva, like that, uptam, sown, ushyam, in barren land.
I have the very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot, drawn by the same horses. And I use them as the same Arjuna, to whom all the kings offered their due respects. But in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them, at a moment's notice, have become null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds on barren land.
Purport. As we have discussed more than once, one should not be puffed up by borrowed plumes. All energies and powers are derived from the Supreme Source, Lord Sri Krishna, and they act as long as He desires and cease to function as soon as He withdraws. All electrical energies are received from the powerhouse, and as soon as the powerhouse stops supplying energy, the bulbs are of no use. In a moment's time, such energies can be generated or withdrawn by the supreme will of the Lord. Material civilization without the blessing of the Lord is child's play only. As long as the parents allow the child to play, it is all right. As soon as the parents withdraw, the child has to stop. Human civilization and all activities thereof must be dovetailed with the supreme blessing of the Lord. And without this blessing, all advancement of human civilization is like decoration on a dead body. It is said here that a dead civilization and its activities are something like clarified butter on ashes. The accumulation of money by a magical wand and the sowing of seeds in a barren land.
I have the very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot drawn by the same horses, and I use them as the same Arjuna to whom all the kings offered their due respects. But in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them, at a moment's notice, have become null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds on a barren land. It's a beautiful verse, huh? So Arjuna and Yudhisthira are Kshatriyas and rulers, and one of the things that Kshatriyas and rulers must always project is what? Confidence. Yes, confidence, power, capability. And that way the citizens all feel secure. Right, so now they're both feeling insecure. First we read about Yudhisthira's anxieties and all the things that it made him do, you know, all of these projections about how things must be okay, they must be okay. And then just all his speculations about, what happened, what could possibly have happened to you, Arjuna? Did this happen? Did this happen? Did this happen? And finally he says, or did Krishna leave? And now we're ruined for all time. And then Arjuna, he was so affected emotionally, he couldn't even talk. And he composed himself just by recounting all the things that Krishna had done for them. See, so this is how he recovered his ability to just tell Yudhisthira what happened. He couldn't just tell Yudhisthira right off. You know, first he had to think about Krishna. And then he told him all these disasters. Not only has Krishna left, but he, Arjuna, who was Yudhisthira's right-hand man, who was the warrior on whom Yudhisthira depended the most, he's now defeated by a bunch of hoods, you know, by a bunch of thugs. People that Arjuna was defeating these Maharathis, you know, Karna and Bhishma and all these great warriors, but here just some ordinary thieves have defeated him. So he's lost Krishna. He could not protect Krishna's wives, and so he's come back to Hastinapur in this condition. And then he speaks this beautiful verse. So I used to have all, he said, I'm the same person. I have all my equipment, my weapons. I have the same horses, the same chariot. I'm the same person. And yet, I'm now useless, null and void. And these three analogies are given. Pouring ghee on ashes. So obviously that will not rekindle a fire. If the fire's out, no amount of ghee poured on it will work. Sowing seeds on barren land, which is easy to understand. And this third one is interesting. Accumulating money with a magic wand. Okay? So this reminds me of these Ponzi schemes, you know, where the so-called investor or the so-called businessman will tell his investors, if you give me your money, I'll bring you 15-20% return. So what happens is they get a lot of people to give them money on that basis, and then they pay a few out using other people's money. They pay them their money back with 20% interest. And they say, oh, he did it. Very well. And so more people invest. And so they keep getting more new money and paying back the old people to build their reputation until they just grow it and grow it and grow it until they've collected a ton of money and then they disappear. It's called a Ponzi scheme. So this is like, yes, we're accumulating money with a magic wand. But in fact, it's just, you know, the money is actually just gone. So, so this point about insecurities, I want to discuss how these insecurities affect us as devotees, how they affect ordinary people, and how devotees deal with them. So, think very carefully about these points. What is the cause of insecurity? Think about some insecurity in your own life and see, can you pinpoint what is the cause of it? Okay, well let's that's a good philosophical answer, but let's see if we can get more specific, more immediate, and not necessarily for devotees. For anybody who's feeling insecure, what is the root cause of it? Okay. Expectations, fear. Okay, the unknown, okay. Take a step even further back. What causes these expectations and fear of the unknown? Relying on material energy, okay, certainly. But there's one action that we voluntarily take. We think we're this body. These things are definitely all essential for the illusion to happen. But what is the immediate cause of it? Yes, forgetting Krishna, that's a symptom. But it's a certain kind of thinking. What's that? I'm the controller, I'm the doer. Yes, yep, these things are all essential for having this type of thought. In which direction are we looking when we feel insecure? On the timeline. We're looking in the future. Exactly. See what I'm saying? And because we're looking in the future, then all of these illusions, the thinking I'm this body, all of the fears and anxieties become manifest because we're thinking about the future. Okay, how am I going to survive? How will I be happy? How will my situation work out? With all these projections going on, then we become insecure. Maybe I won't have what I need, right? Maybe I won't be cared for. What if I don't have this? What if I don't have that? What if I need this? I can't get it. Okay. Then we feel unprotected. We feel like then we have to make some kind of arrangement. We have to do something. What mode of nature stimulates thinking in the future? Passion. The mode of passion. The mode of passion means we can't be happy today because we've got to do all this stuff for the future. So we won't be insecure. Right? Isn't it? There are many mantras that go with the mode of passion. I mean, the mode of ignorance is, man, everything's cool. Right? Mode of ignorance, there's no anxiety. There's just ignorance. And ignorance is bliss. See? So if we're feeling insecure, then we know this, we're being affected by the mode of passion. Now, if we're feeling insecure, like we're saying, for example, we may not feel like we're good enough or we're adequate to do the things that our lives are demanding of us. Sometimes we may try to compensate that. We don't want other people to know we're insecure, so we express what? What? Confidence, a kind of false confidence, which is also known as pride, yes. Then we start acting very proud because we don't want people to know how insecure we're really feeling inside, right? So pride is like advanced insecurity. When we're puffed up, when we have big ego, when we keep trying to make people think we're more than what we are, we're actually just trying to cover our insecurities, right? And project this really competent, tough, wealthy, or macho exterior, you know. And that's why clothes are such a big, a big deal to so many people. Just getting the right kind of clothes and, you know, expensive. So all of these feelings are products of the modes of passion and ignorance. Pride is actually like in ignorance, especially if one is, you know, reading one's own reviews. You're not only acting proud, but you really think that you're something. This is the mode of ignorance, because again, then, oh, I'm not worried about anything. Okay, yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah, pride is ignorance, insecurity is passion. And these are called the abhadras, the inauspicious things in the heart. Srimad Bhagavatam enjoins in the first canto, second chapter, I think it's verse 18, Nasta Prayeshva Bhadreshu. These inauspicious things are removed automatically. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Sometimes people ask, how can I get rid of pride? How can I get rid of insecurity? How can I be more peaceful? And the answer is in that verse, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Perpetually. Nityam means always, right? Bhagavata means the person Bhagavat, Srila Prabhupada, or the book Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam. And Sevaya means service. So regularly hearing Bhagavatam, rendering service to the pure devotees, removes these inauspicious things in the heart and establishes Bhagavati Uttamashloke Bhaktir, devotion, Bhavati Naishtiki, irrevocably. It cannot be removed. That's security, right? That is security. And there's no need to be very proud if you are serving Krishna. You can be proud of Krishna, you can be proud of Srila Prabhupada, but you don't have to walk around feeling, yes, now I'm a big devotee. You know, we're not worried, because we have something that removes the insecurities from our heart. And it's something we can always do. We can always go to Bhagavatam class. We can usually stay awake in Bhagavatam class. And we can always render service to the pure devotees. So, that gives us great confidence, because we have the process, you see. Then, the Bhagavatam goes on, evam prasana manasa. In that state of mind, in the state of life, rather, one's mind becomes very peaceful, very satisfied, prasanna. Evam prasana manasa, bhagavad bhakti yogata, by just discharging devotional service. And then, tada rajas tamo bhava. This influence of passion and ignorance, insecurity and pride are removed, loving service to the personality of Godhead becomes permanently established in the life of the devotees. Evam prasana, tada rajas tamo bhava kamo labho dayat chaye. Two other symptoms are mentioned there specifically. Kama, which is? And lobha, which is greed. So lust and greed, also passion and ignorant symptoms are removed. Cheta etair anavidham. Then the heart is purified, the consciousness is purified. Stitvam sattva prasidati. One becomes established in sattva, which is goodness. So that's the benefit of hearing Bhagavatam every day and rendering devotional service. That you automatically come to the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, there's no insecurity. There's just nothing to worry about. because we're living in the present. We're not thinking about the future. See? We're not lamenting about the past, because you can't change anything in the past, and the things in the future are just beyond your control. So this absolutely makes no sense to live in the future or the past. The present is all we've got. Present is like cash. The future is like this post-dated check. Somebody gives you a post-dated check, you have it, okay, but you can't cash it until the date is there, you see? So sometimes people will give you a post-dated check and then they'll skip town with your goods. So the future's like that, not guaranteed. And the past is like receipts. You can't go to Walmart and say, here's my receipt, I'd like to buy this. You know, you can return something, but you can't buy something new with the receipt. You've already spent that money. So today, right now, is like cash. How are we going to spend it? If we spend it in Krishna's service, then we're in the mode of goodness, and then we become happy. Stipam sattve prasidati. And then, evam prasana manasa. When the mind is become enlivened by being in the mode of goodness, and engaging in devotional service, bhagavat tattva vijnanam. Then we get realization. See, that's what's hard about coming to Krishna consciousness. We are very, very insecure in this material world. I mean, so many people have cheated us. We've been disappointed by so many circumstances, or we've had so many failures, or so many shortcomings in our own life and experience. So we get, you know, we just become disappointed. Bhagavat tattva vijnanam means we get not only theoretical knowledge of Krishna consciousness, but vijnana. You know, vijnana means that it is totally internalized. Like if you eat and you are satisfied, that's vijnana. You don't measure out, this is the amount of food that I need to be satisfied. You know, nobody does that. Maybe somebody who's on an intense diet might do that. And even then, they won't be satisfied. They just know that's all they get. But we don't carry around a little measuring cup. Say, I eat exactly, 2.5 cups of food every meal, and no more, no less. No, we just eat, and then when we're satisfied, we eat a little bit more. But we do come to a point where no more. So this is vijnan, right? So in the same way, material life, when we're really fed up with it, we no more. There's no question about it. It's not that, well, I think I like that part of it, but not that. You know, we don't want anything to do with it because we're finished with the insecurities. We're finished with the anxieties that it produces. You know, no amount of money can give you security. No amount of family development can give you security. Everything is just so tenuous in this material world. Kamala Dala Jala, a beautiful analogy. This is like a drop of water on the leaf of a lotus flower. Just going to fall at any moment. So in his instructions to Vyasadeva, Narada Muni says that people who are philosophically inclined just don't pursue security in that way. They don't bother with it. It's just a waste of time. You know, you just, serving Krishna brings you to vijnanam, and vijnanam is security. Vijnanam is knowledge that will never leave you, no matter what happens. So understanding this in material terms, how does it apply? Now, Arjuna appears very insecure. And Yudhisthira appears very insecure in these verses. Why is that? What's going on? Can anyone say? These great devotees. Yeah?
That Arjuna had said that he was overcome by the demon of misunderstanding. So...
That's a good answer, although that happened earlier, right? In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is insecure. He asks Krishna. Krishna pacifies him. And then even in this chapter, Arjuna is remembering these instructions that Krishna gave him. And still it's not enough to pacify him. He's still feeling like this. So he's feeling, without Krishna, I'm useless. Without Krishna, I'm useless. Why would Krishna want Arjuna to feel that way? So he would what? So he wouldn't need Krishna? To remove any pride? Any tent of pride? Any other ideas? Transcendental ecstasy of insecurity. So it says. Has anyone read that in the Nectar of Devotion? Don't remember that one. So it'd be forced to depend on Krishna? Yes. And Krishna is not here, so what are they going to have to do? They're going to have to renounce. They're going to have to go where Krishna is. Right? Krishna has left this world, so they're also going to. Yes. They're also going to leave this world. So remember earlier, Krishna was admonishing our Yudhisthira, you have to rule the kingdom, you have to rule the kingdom. He brought him to Bhishma over and over. He's telling him, do sacrifices, do your duties. And then he just goes. And so our Yudhisthira has been doing that faithfully. Arjuna has been helping him. Now Krishna is gone and Arjuna is saying, I can't do this anymore. Now, do you think that's happening in spite of Krishna or by Krishna's desire? What do you? Yeah, Krishna wants them to go. So this is also a very important lesson in this regard. Even pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada, like Yudhisthira, Arjuna, when Krishna desires, things don't go right for them materially because Krishna has some other plan. So it's not that everything is just wonderful in this material world for the devotee. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, one who treads the path of God will find it strewn with thorns. So it's kind of a Judeo-Christian idea that if you're religious, then everything will be wonderful. You'll have money, you'll have, you'll be popular, you'll have great family, you know. And if something's wrong materially, it's because you don't believe in the Lord enough. You ever heard that? We don't subscribe to that in Krishna consciousness because we know this material world is not where we belong. So if Krishna is making things difficult for us materially, then that's his mercy. That's his mercy for us. It's not an accident if we are struggling or suffering in our lives in Krishna consciousness. It's not that Krishna is just not having a good day. You know, it's not that Krishna didn't read his email and find out all the things that I wanted to do. You know, Krishna knows exactly what we want, but he also knows what is good for us. So it's said that if Krishna likes you, he gives you everything. And if Krishna loves you, he takes everything away. So if we're enjoying materially, then we should feel a little insecure. that's all right. I'm getting this, I'm getting that, but it may not last forever. We should at least have that cognizance, right? This may not, at any time my situation could change, so let me not be too attached to it, right? And on the other hand, if we want this, but we're not getting it, then we should understand that Krishna knows it's not good for us. So, just like there was a, oh good, the offering's coming. I was feeling some transcendental insecurity with Ankush. Ankush is cooking today. So there was a story of Sanatan Goswami who wanted so much to join Lord Chaitanya. He stopped going to work for the Mohammedan king, so he was thrown in jail. Jai Shri Shri Gornitai. So then he escaped from jail by bribing the jailkeeper with all of his money. And Sanatan was had no attachment for keeping that money whatsoever. He just wanted to leave and get free. And his servant, whose name escapes me, servant stayed with him and accompanied Sanatan through the mountains. He wouldn't take the main road. He had to take some back roads through some dangerous places. And the servant, unbeknownst to Sanatan, was carrying some gold coins, some valuable gold coins with him. So the two of them arrived in a hotel, and the hotel keeper was treating them very nicely. He asked his astrologer to read Sanatan's palm. And so from this he could understand that Sanatan had some money. So Sanatan didn't have any money. So he was very suspicious. Why are they treating me so nicely? So he asked his servant, do you have any money? And the servant said, yes, I have these two gold coins. So Sanatan took them immediately and gave them to the hotel keeper. He said to the servant, why are you carrying this death knell? You think that this is going to protect you, your cash, but why are you carrying it with you? It's just going to kill you. So then he dismissed his servant and sent him back home. Gave all the money to the hotel keeper who helped Sanatan get to Lord Chaitanya. So that was the story. So the things that we think will make us happy and secure are actually the causes of our insecurity. It is Krishna alone that will give us security in this dangerous material world. That will never change. We can always depend on Krishna and turn to Him. Any comments or questions?
What happened to Krishna's wives? This very sad ending.
As I understand, these wives of Krishna were taken by these dacoits, but these dacoits were actually Krishna coming to take his wives back. There's some pastime with it. Does anyone recall this pastime?
When I went to Gujarat once for Dwarka Yatra, on the way they showed us a pond in which all the wives jumped into. And so they committed suicide so that they are saved from this dacoit. So, and that became the Gopi Chandan, that mud of that lake. So some stories also like that.
Different versions. I don't recall anything Srimad Bhagavatam on this point. Have you, Krishna Charan Prabhu, you've ever heard this discussion? So there's some pastime where the wives were all stolen back by Krishna. Okay.
I guess I have a dual question. What about the position of people like Pundarik Vidyaniti, who love Krishna but have all kind of opulence? And also, like, so if there's some dynamic that he can take away your karma of what you deserve if you are trying to love Krishna, it seems like.
Yeah, Garrison asked about Pundarik Vidyaniti, who is this very, very wealthy and materialistic person externally, but was a great devotee within. So, yes, there are even devotees that we know in ISKCON who are materially opulent, and yet they keep their Krishna consciousness. So it's not that, you see, you can't judge externally either if one has money or doesn't have money. It's enjoying that one should just make enough money to keep body and soul together. And some devotees, due to their past pious deeds, their past work, inherit lots of money. It's not that it's just come to them accidentally. You know, they have earned that in the past. If they are intelligent and able to use it for Krishna's service, I'm thinking of Ambarish Prabhu, our godbrother. You know, he has inherited a huge fortune from the Fords. And he's using it to build the Mayapur temple. That's such a glorious thing. So, and he's a very, very sweet devotee and highly realized devotee. You know, so it is neither a qualification nor a disqualification. The place where money becomes more problematic generally is when people think that it's going to bring them security. And they just get really attached to it. And think, if I have money, I don't have to worry about Krishna. Or I'll get money and then I'll worry about Krishna. First, let me get money, then I'll worry about Krishna. See, this is the mistake.
It's more like the consciousness that you feel satisfied by something more than actually getting something that's taken away.
Yes, it's the consciousness that now, it's the desire to be secure. Yeah, what is that desire to be secure in terms of the animalistic propensities? Anyone remember? Nidrahara, Maitunya, Bhayam. Yes, defending or fear. See, we have every animal has a desire to eat, sleep, mate, and then defend. And Prabhupada said, of all of those urges, the urge to defend is the strongest. So this fearing propensity, the desire to be secure, is very powerful. And we think that money will give it to us, but that's the illusion. Okay, any other comments or questions?
What is the meaning of that Arjuna saying to Krishna, oh, you are so truthful? What is that joke?
You know, sometimes when friends are joking, they'll flatter each other. Oh, you are such a great scholar. Oh, you are so wise. You are so smart. Just hang out with Sagar for a while. You'll see. No, he will tell you, you are a great person, Prabhu. And then he'll ask you for $5. Okay. No, just friendly joking words. Yes, you are so truthful. There's a you can read in the original text, there's some exchange like that. This is a sweet exchange amongst friends that Arjuna is remembering. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.